G'day everyone, and welcome to another episode of A Place to Call Home podcast. On today's episode, I chat to Ben Reardon, and Ben has generously and amazingly jumped on board and told his story and his family's story about some of the things that they have faced in recent times. It's a little bit different to some of my previous conversations, but I think it is one that definitely needs to be told, and I think it's going to strike a chord with a lot of people out there. We will be talking about rural mental health and suicide and the effects that suicide have on families and also family farms. And while it is a little bit different than some of my previous conversations, Ben has an incredible story and I was so honoured that he wanted to jump on board and tell it. So I hope I've done it justice for him. Look, we have teamed up with the boys from TX for this episode to help promote, I suppose, some of the free services that they have on offer there for people. So if you do know anyone that is facing mental health challenges or talking around the suicide conversation, definitely get on to TX. Now, for those of you who don't know, TX is, I suppose, the mental health service that people tell their mates about. It's an awesome organisation and they provide free mental health counselling for tradies, truckies, rural, blue collar workers and those that care about them Australia-wide. It's a free service. You can give them a call or send them a message and you can talk to them from Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. And I'll be doing a big push this week about TX to help get the message out there. And hopefully this conversation sparks some conversations that might need to happen. Anyway, without further ado, I hope you enjoy this episode and please be aware that yes, we will be talking about mental health and suicide. Cheers. Ben, thank you very much for jumping on the Place to Call Home podcast. Mate, before we get too far into the conversation, can you tell me a bit more about yourself, where you live and currently what you're up to?
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me on. I do appreciate it. So I grew up here in Kyogle on the north coast of New South Wales. Yeah, I sort of headed up north when I was pretty early on in the part. And I've currently been up there for the last sort of seven seasons and have just sort of moved back home. I've got mum and a couple of brothers and a sister. So they're all here too.
Mate, going back to the start, did you grow up on the land? If you didn't, how were you connected?
So I did, Sam. So we've been here for 79. My grandparents moved to this place. Four Winds is where we are here. And my dad sort of took it over early on in the part. Dad took it over when he was about 20. And my pop sort of got sick and he ended up in a nursing home. And then for a lot of years it was Nan and my dad. And then in the last sort of 15 years it's been just mum and dad. Always been here. Always been running around and catching the chooks and it's good.
So bit you pretty early in life. And after growing up, you kind of went away, you said. Where did you work up north?
So I went up and actually worked for contract musterer Robbie White my first season. So, we were sort of everywhere, sort of all through the lower peninsula, sort of top of the Gulf, which was great. That led me to probably end up with a few contacts, Sam. So through that, I sort of got on to Clint Wachner and then ended up, that turned into a pretty lengthy career with Stanbroke. So I finished up doing 6 years for Stanbroke and, jumped a few corporate hoops and ended up in a pretty good role there towards the end. And, it was great. Been a great company, Stanbroke, over the years.
And the home block there where your parents are at, how much did you spend much time coming back during the wet season helping them out there? Did the rest of the family do as well? Do you all keep coming back?
Yeah, so in the early part I probably did, Sam. First sort of couple of seasons I was away up north. I was back home for sort of a 4 or 5 month wet season every year. And then once I sort of took on those more management roles with Stanbroke, probably it got less and less. Like, you know, it sort of brought me back to my sort of 3 and 4 weeks, and you spend half that over at the coast at the beach. So probably in the last recent years, not as much. Always been able to come home. Mum and Dad have always, there's always been a bed here. Yeah, for sure.
And what's the operation that they run there at the property?
So Mum and Dad are just mainly beef cattle here at the present. Little bit of cropping every now and then. We might put a bit of corn in or sorghum to put away for silage or something like that. But mainly just a beef enterprise. And the last couple of years, it's sort of taken a bit of a step away from the breeders off the back of probably the 2019 drought. And we've sort of just split it into two enterprises, more of a breeding enterprise, and then there's a pretty significant trade enterprise on the side now, just because sort of we sold a lot of core breeders in the drought, and we didn't really want to do that again, so it was more get it back to a breeder number that we can sustain when it goes dry again.
And mate, the plan was always for you, you're always going to go north, spend a bit of time up there. And then, unfortunately, you suppose a bit of change of circumstances happened pretty quickly and pretty dramatically. Did you want to touch a bit more on, I suppose, those what occurred in your family?
Yeah. If you spoke to me 12 months ago, funny enough, Sam, I would have told you I'd be north and I would have never been coming home. That's probably changed a little bit. We had some conversations, Dad and I, back in December. And was sort of what we're going to do, how we're going to bring some stuff back into the fold here. And, started to kick off some good conversations, and I was just sort of going to probably not enough work here for Dad and I to have been here both full time. So I was just going to pick up some day work and sort of seasonal work about in between. In February, Dad actually took his own life on us, shook us right up a lot, and really sort of changed a lot. Yeah, it pretty well turned the whole business on its head, actually, to be honest. So that's sort of my day working hasn't really come about much this year. I've done a little bit just to sort of keep the cash flow topping up, but I've sort of been here, yeah, just sort of having to sort out what's going on here at home a little bit more, and yeah, that's sort of the nuts and bolts of it, I suppose.
The next part of this conversation was something I actually recorded after I did the initial interview with Ben. We were chatting away after it, and he actually was telling me the story about what happened at the time. And a bit of listener discretion here, we will be talking about what happened to his father and suicide, and also mental health in Australia. And I just wanted to give everyone a bit of a heads up that there is a distressing topic, but I think I wanted to add this in because I feel like it is something that we need to talk about, and by raising stuff like this, hopefully it will help someone else in a different position, help another family, maybe have a conversation before it reaches this part. But anyway, just wanted to give you guys a heads up. So yeah, cheers.
Mate, I don't even know how to kick that off, but we were just talking just before, and it's something definitely I don't even know where I'm going to throw it in. But can you just explain to us a bit more what we were just chatting about there, how you mentioned, you know, the circumstances of your father's death, and how that happened, how your brother and you had been discussing previously about it, and you've been talking to your mum?
Yeah, so it was a big shock, massive shock in some ways, but then in other ways it really wasn't. So Dad had struggled with some stuff on and off for a lot of years, and sort of I suppose we always just shrugged it off and said, oh, that's Dad, that's the way he is, you know, he gets high and he gets low, and that's just the way he is. But about 2 weeks, and even just the day before, me and my brother were talking, and we just said we just hoped Dad didn't do something stupid. Like, we just really strange, Sam, how you have like just a feeling that something bad's going to happen. You know, we'd bring it up with mum, and mum would sort of be like, oh, yeah, he's just a little bit stressed at the moment about this or stressed about that. And she wouldn't shrug it off. Like she knows dad better than I ever will. Like as far as, I think she knew that he was struggling with some stuff, but I think mum had just seen it so many times before that she just thought it was just another time. So then when it actually happened, my brother was first to sort of find out about it. And then he rang me straight away, and I actually happened to be down at Albury at the time. And, so I was about 13 hours away. And, quickly down there doing some day work, and I quickly finished and got in the car and started driving home. And then by this point it was all small town gossip and everyone sort of knew about it. My phone was just blowing up with people ringing me. And, but having to ring your mother and then mum was at work and tell her what had happened, and it just destroyed you, Sam. That's the toughest thing I've ever had to say to anyone. Telling your mother that her husband has just passed away and your father. And mum didn't even believe me at the start. Mum told me he's just down the paddock, stop being stupid. And I said, mum, I got much better stuff to be stupid about. And then rang my sister, and same thing with my sister. She just kept telling me, no, you just be at home. And I'm going, no, mate, he's not coming home anymore. And, so that's a bit of a pill to swallow. And then my little brother happened to be away doing TAFE. And the same thing, told Tom. And, I was just like, mate, dad, he's not coming home. It's a pill to swallow, man. Yeah, it's a big pill to swallow. Same rang dad's best mate. He hung a phone up on me and told me, stop being stupid. It's not even funny. And he hung up on me and then rang me back half an hour later and he's like, holy shit, Mick's gone. And I was like, yeah. So there's some pretty tough conversations come out of it, but the craziest bit was me and my brother talking about it the day before and a couple of weeks leading up to it. And that's what it, once you got part of the sort of past the emotional front of it and the initial just whack, holy shit, he's not coming home, he's not walking through the back door. And then you sit back and you look at it and you go, holy shit, we were talking about it and just hoped that something wouldn't happen. Like, I don't know if we could have stopped it. I honestly don't know if we could have stopped it. But, even on dad's point of view, like he gave mum a kiss before mum went to work and said that I love you, and nothing was unusual in his routine. And then lunchtime and he's gone. It's like, that's just crazy how it happened.
Mate, thanks for sharing that. I think that point, like you said, like, you know, you had these conversations previously before with your mother and with your brother even. It's just incredible how I suppose people can brush it off and people brush it off and you know, it is something like, you know, you were thinking about it, like, you know, and there's nothing you guys could have done to change what has happened. But it's, I think it's so relevant in today and in agriculture where, you know, drought comes in or disaster happens and, you know, we see those people get themselves down and your family members get themselves down during it. So I think it's a very poignant reminder, Ben. So I appreciate you sharing that. So thank you.
I honestly wish I wasn't sharing with you, but unfortunately that is the very sad reality, and I don't know. Yeah, we just bottle everything up, big and burly about it, I suppose. But you just never know what's going on in someone else's brain. Like, and even when we do or suspect something, we don't do anything about it half the time. Like, and then it is what it is. They're the cards we got, unfortunately.
Mate. Thank you for sharing that. And I think it's something like, you know, definitely mental health in rural Australia is something that's an issue that's not talked about enough. But I think your journey and the reason why I wanted to get you on here is this journey of you've kind of been starting the procession of coming back home, but you've very quickly been thrust into a totally different situation that you weren't expecting. And I suppose I just wanted to talk about what you've gone about since then. How have you, I know there would have been, you know, it's not too long ago that this has happened. And obviously the family and everyone has been dealing with this tragedy, but also at the business side of things and coming back home, how have you gone about, like what type of ways have you gone? You didn't initially come straight back in and take over the running of the property. And what steps have you gone about to ensure your mum, who is alive and well, she's how is she going to make sure she's being looked after currently?
Yeah. So sort of just touching back on Dad quickly, probably the saddest or what I've seen as the most frustrating bit for myself was like the business we've got here, the cattle business, the farm, which had gone through its succession here 30 odd years ago with my grandparents, and then mum and dad have packed real estate assets onto it, et cetera. Is mum and dad built that business? And I suppose just touching on dad and the way things panned out, and like we'll ask questions to why dad thought he had to go down that path for the rest of my life. But mum and dad built that asset and dad just took himself away. Literally just signed off on everything, on everyone. And that's probably been the forefront of my mind, because the whole thing that like is just get mum happy, get mum solid. Because I suppose dad literally just, for a better way, well, probably not a better way of putting it, Sam, but he's just probably taken the next 30 years away from him and mum. Like they should be looking at weddings and birthdays and looking after grandkids and doing whatever they want, semi-retiring per se, but I suppose dad's taken that from mum, like these next 30 years in a way. So that's been the forefront of my mind and the toughest probably pill to swallow. Like if dad walked in tomorrow, Sam, I reckon I'd punch him straight in the face and I'd be like, why do you think you need to do that, dad? But which is tough. But so it's getting mum solid, which that's sort of how we've rolled the whole thing, and my brothers and sisters are the same. It's sort of, in some ways, I was probably the only one that could have stepped back into the business. Like as far as my littlest brother, he's only 17 and he's an apprentice locally here. So he's sort of tied to his job. I've got another brother and he's sort of tied to his job. He's on the Gold Coast as a diesel fitter. And then my sister's a nurse. So they're all sort of tied to their job. I was the only one that was sort of flexible enough to be able to step back in and grab hold of the business from mum, I suppose. And yeah, and it was probably just a bit of a change in thinking through stuff I'd seen and stuff I'd learned and like off mentors and stuff. And I don't mean to put this as in like take anything away from dad and what he's achieved, but dad, like very sort of older school mentality, like big broad shoulders sort of mentality, which I think a lot of men in rural Australia have, especially that like sort of older generation. But I just sort of come home and I've seen a fantastic real estate business dad's got put together, fantastic farm that he's bought off the back of all this real estate with. The farm supported the real estate business. But the nuts and bolts of it were all there. It just needed like tweaking. And with the mindset of just keeping mum happy and get mum comfortable has been that, yeah, that's sort of the only thing that's really pushed it along, if that makes a lot of sense, Sam. Yeah, that probably is a bit screwed up and doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's sort of the nuts and bolts of what I've tried to achieve, yeah.
Mate, like hats off to you. I think being in that situation that you would have been in and like I can't relate at all, but coming back, and it's something that I know that is, it's not a common situation, but it's something I've heard before, storylines whether the mother or father passed away and the kids have kind of had to come back in and help. And usually, you know, it sometimes goes one way or another, whether they come in and run the operation, or like you've said, you've discussed this previously with me, where you've come in, you've leveraged off that real estate business that they've built up successfully, leveraged off the farm as what it is now, and ensure that your mum is right financially, setting herself up, while you at the same time. The next question, what was...
For this episode of A Place to Call Home podcast, we've teamed up with the team from TX, which are the mental health service that people tell their mates about. For those of you who don't know, TX provides a free mental health counselling for tradies, truckies, rural, blue-collar workers and those that care about them Australia-wide. And you can reach out to TX and speak to one of their counsellors from Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. And if you want to get in contact, the best way to do so is give 0488 846 988 a call or a text. Be sure to reach out or pass it on to someone who you think might need a conversation. Cheers.
Why didn't you just come back in and step over and just take over and run the farm? Why did you choose to not do that and keep on progressing with your learning and growing professionally and personally?
I suppose it's back on Dad again. Like, I've seen Dad, and when it comes to putting a crop in or doing something with cattle or fencing or anything to do with an operational level, like, there's no one that I would argue is any more sounder than Dad. Like, that's him 100%. But I just seen this, like, and don't get me wrong, like, Dad's put a great business together, so he's obviously got enough financial skills, but I'd always seem come under pressure when there would be a market change like we've just seen, or like a drought would happen. Like, you'd see him just come under pressure and it sort of halt all his big grand plans. So I suppose I just, yeah, I don't think you can ever stop learning enough, but I suppose you got me a bit stumped on this question, like, because, yeah, I know what you're saying, because, like, the business is there, like, why not just come back in and just run the business? I suppose I need to learn more, and off the back of seeing Dad, like, he pretty well self-taught himself everything, because I suppose it's around now for me to learn it, but when he was my age, it wasn't there, or was not as readily accessible as what it is now. I suppose that's probably, why. Yeah, I think that's why, Sam, because, back on Dad, like, hats off to him, and I greatly respect him, but he was always under pressure when it come to, like, hard business decisions. And, and I think our modern-day managers and modern-day farmers, like, that, the office is now 80% of our roles nearly, like, as far as for running our businesses, like, we're nowhere near as operational as practical as what we once were. So I suppose back on Dad, I think. Yeah, definitely. Yep.
So, Carly, where is what's the situation of the property at the moment that you've set it up for and that your family have done?
So, off the back of a few guys that I probably just listened to on other podcasts and other stuff, just like, just some weird podcasts that you listen to when you're just driving from A to B, and you just, to some people, they're the most boring thing in the world, but they're just really good. So I heard a comment that we've only really got two businesses we've got in farming. Like, we've got our real estate business that grows in value whether or not we get out of bed or stay asleep. And then second to that, we've got a production business, which really, when you bring the nuts and bolts down to it, your production business, all it is sell grass to the highest bidder. So that's what, I just had that and I come back and sat down with Mum straight after it happened. I said, this is what I think we need to do, Mum. I said, blah, blah, blah. I said, why can't we just look at the farm as a real estate business and sell our grass, which is our production, to the highest bidder? I said, I think in the current market, we can't, I said, without someone being here in the current market, we can't achieve that. So let's look at a lease option or an adjustment option, and sat down and did the figures, and it made really good sense. And it sort of, it's going to allow us to refinance some things and just get on top of some mortgages and stuff like that by just, because it creates a solid income, opposed to at the moment it's sort of, you know, oh, you tell the bank manager them wieners might be ready in March, but then it goes dry and they're now not ready till June. So by sort of taking it to a lease and an adjustment, it just creates a bit more of a stable income, which will allow us to refinance and do some things. Yeah.
I think it's a good idea, and it's a pretty interesting way to think of it, and probably not enough producers do think of it that way, thinking of the farm as like a real estate asset as such. And they do it in one sense, but to have that ability to step back and go, we can generate cash off this without another person being there, without being tied up. And it sounds like with the help of your outside real estate investments that your family did, that your mum right now, like she's in a pretty good situation. You explained she hasn't got the workload of the property on her shoulders, but she's also being able to live a pretty comfortable life and set herself up without being tied down too much. How did the other kids in the family go about this decision to not keep running the farm as a business and just heading down this more real estate leasing model?
My brother Nick, he's pretty open to sort of talking about it and stuff. My little sister, she's probably just taken a bit of a different path with her own life as far as going down nursing and the sort of farming, and that isn't really her thing. But that's probably like, and the same as my little brother, like God love Tommy, but he's like he's only 17, so I think he's still trying to work out what he's doing himself. But mum and myself have just tried to keep it all very open. So we just started doing meetings about it all, like sort of without dad going, you take the head of your table away, sort of someone's got to fill the spot. And probably, yeah, the unwritten rule, the eldest one always sort of ends up taking on the role. But yeah, with just keeping everything honest and transparent, there's no sort of hidden bombs or anything in amongst any of it. So they've been really good about it. Sort of, yeah, and hopefully they can see long term what position it's going to put us in, Sam. Yeah.
Did you bring anyone else in outside the business to help with this mediation through this part of the, I suppose, the journey?
Yeah, we've had some great people around us. Probably a lot of the real estate and stuff dad used to just manage himself. So we brought a property manager in now that does that. It's just listed with a local agent in town here. But he's also been our livestock agent for a number of years now. So that was just a pretty sort of made sense transition, just to take that pressure away from mum. Yeah, and then, there'd be too many to name, but like there's been a lot of people come around us and help out where they can. But yeah, as far as just on the business side of it, probably, Andrew coming into it is probably the biggest thing. He has helped us along, yes. That and other people, Sam, like accountant and like our bank manager, relations. I can't stress enough how important relations are and connections. They're massive. They're half your business is just sitting down having a cup of coffee and talking to the bench manager. That's huge. Them relationship stuff.
And during that initial period after your father's passing, you would have had to really leverage off a lot of those outside people. I suppose you've been away up north. You haven't been that involved in the business. You've only just started the discussion of starting to come back home. How much did they help you guys get through that initial period? And I suppose what questions were they asking of you, or what were they doing in terms of servicing and helping?
So probably Andrew, who's our agent, he's been like great when it comes to like what's going on with the current cattle, because we're still fully stocked here at the present. Sort of since dad's passing, I've been looking after that. But Andrew's just been great to leave information off, especially in the current market. It's we've seen feast or fathom, really. If you sold them before Christmas, you're a millionaire, but now you try and sell them now, it's just red line after red line. So Andrew's been great with that. Then people like our accountants and bank managers and those guys, they're the same sort of, they've all been really understanding and situation we're in. probably the other frustrating bit with Dad, Sam, like, you know, nothing stops. Like, the sad reality of when all them tragic things happen is nothing stops. Like, yeah, like, you know, nothing stops and everyone's just got to get on with it, really. So, yeah, they've been great, them outside. And even, like, friends and family and stuff like that sort of been, yeah, incredibly valuable to the family. It's been an interesting journey. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how to put that into words. Like, yeah, like all the normal things. Like everyone just comes around you. But the relationships, especially revolving the business, that they're huge and very important, I think. Yeah,
I think it's pretty special being in a rural community. If something does come across, it's pretty amazing the amount of people that will come out of the woodwork to help you. Or to help a family, and it sounds like that's exactly what happened to you guys throughout this period. Ben, can you just chat a bit more about what you're up to now? Like, so you are, like you said, helping a bit at home, but you've actually been doing a bit of managerial work on a property not far away. Is that right?
Yeah, yes, sort of, Sam. Not so much more managerial. I've been working for a family down at Wagga, which is a little way away from here. Yeah, they're great, and they've been a great sounding board too, because Josh Slattery, he's a great guy. So yeah, they've just been a great sounding board for what's been going on, and yeah, helping with different stuff. And Josh has been incredibly flexible. Like, if I've got to be back here, which I've spent more time here at home, but you know, if I can just ring him up and go, if you've got a couple of weeks worth of work, Josh, and he'll go, yep. And I can go back down there for a couple of weeks worth of work and just top the cash flow up a little bit. And yeah, no, they've been great. And they've got a great culture in their business, which has been great to see what a good culture in a business can create. Great guys. And yeah, it's been a good sounding board. That's a good way of putting it, I think, yeah.
Where what's next, mate? You've kind of got yourself, the family, in a situation that they can tick over, like you've chatted about, and you've got this role there that you've been bouncing back and forth to. But what's on the horizon for you? Are you looking to further develop a bit more, or take on another role, or even like a managerial role going forward? What's on the horizon?
Yeah, I am definitely gonna want to keep learning. I think the day we stop learning, that's the day we should stop in general. Like, we don't ever stop learning. So back here in January, I applied to go to Marcus Oldham next year, which I got accepted to, which is great. And again, I put that one down to Dad again. I suppose I just seen Dad again as like a great, practical, awesome farm manager, but just come under constant pressure when it comes to anything to do with accounting or relationships or finance. So and then I had a lot of friends that have done Marcus and stuff like that, and they said, yeah, if you want all that sort of hard business knowledge around farming, like that's they're a great university. So threw me hat in the ring there and got away with that. So that's on the horizon next year. Probably more just the end of this year, looks like, just getting this business fully wrapped up and in a position where it's back looking after itself, and with sort of minimal, sort of having to be like run minimally with minimal staff per se. And then so Marcus will be 3 years to them, which would be great. And then, I'd just probably then after that, I think that I'll be 26 by then, is just surround myself by just like-minded people, just continue to learn. And I think I'll end up back in Northern Australia. It holds a pretty, pretty strong part there. So, it's exciting, but a little bit nervous at the same time with a few different things, and sort of it's still up in the air a little bit. Which, as I said back at the start, is just crazy, because if you asked me 12 months ago, I would have told you that I'd be north forever and I was never coming home, or never doing anything else but just chasing cows at big numbers of cows. But, yeah, it's just funny how you sort of, you just flip the switch and you decide to go on a different path, I suppose, yeah.
Well, it sounds like kind of been forced down a path, I suppose, that you weren't really going to go down, Ben. So hats off for you for taking the ball and running with it. Mate, and yeah, Northern Australia is pretty hard to get out of your blood. It's one of those places where once you've been up here, it's hard to go back down south. So I don't blame you. mate, Marcus is going to be really incredible there, learning a lot. I've heard a lot of positive stories about Marcus and people that have gone there, and, you know, the skills that they've acquired during their time there and leveraging off skills and mentors. And you mentioned before, have you had many mentors along your journey so far, and especially recently, that have really helped out?
Yeah, definitely. Dad's the biggest one. He always will be. He'll hold the big card there. Yeah, and then I reckon Ian Braithwaite has been a pretty special one for me. Yeah, Ian's a pretty big name in Northern Australia. What he's done for the vet world in Northern Australia, everyone knows his name. He's he's been a very big mentor of mine, especially with like setting up herds. And Ian's been massive. Like Clint Lochner, he's been massive for me. I looked up to him, like just a great horseman, he's a great stockman. And now he's like in a general manager role. He's just a great guy. Probably Jim Lindsay's another one. He sort of flipped did the big made my head do a big spin, really. I off the back of doing a few courses at the gym, and yeah, sit me down and he just abused me and tell me everything I was doing wrong, and people just listen to him, like, and he just get through to people. So yeah, them four guys have been huge for me. There's countless others, but between them four guys, I think that they hold a pretty big part, I think.
What would be the one piece of advice that you've learnt throughout your period of working in agriculture that you'd like to give to someone just starting out?
Yeah, probably. And I suppose it's where I touched on it before, and I suppose it's what I'm trying to say before when you asked it last time, but, listen to guys that have been there before you, and take lots of bits of information off lots of different people, and, you'll work out what works for you. I think, don't get narrow-minded by just idolising one person. If you took 1% out of every person you met, you'd be pretty bloody good by the end of it, I think.
That's some sound advice, Ben. Thank you very much for jumping on board the Place Call Home podcast. Mate, it's a bit of a cracking story and one I think a lot of people are going to get out of. So thank you very much for telling it.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. No, hopefully – I hope that it doesn't resonate with someone, but hopefully if someone else has got a bit of a similar story, they can listen to it and be like, yep, yeah, like, you know, the cards we get are the cards we get. We can't change it. So, yeah, thank you, Sam. I appreciate it for letting me on. Thank you.
Thank you.
G'day everyone. I hope you enjoyed that episode, and if you have, be sure to give it a like and a follow and maybe even throw us a rating. It's the best way to get the message out there about what we're trying to do and help spread the story. Anyway, it's a bit tricky coming up with a quote for this episode, but I think I found one that fits the bill. And it's from S. McNutt, and it says, "In life, the only two things you can control are your effort and your attitude. Everything else is not up to you." Thank you very much and have a great day.